Good morning, everybody. It's Dave Weiner here. It's May 17th, 2005. This is Morning Coffee Notes. Today, I had hoped to be talking about two new, what I call, conversation starters for people who are interested in syndication. And I call those people, I call that Team RSS. Boy, I can't even tell you where the... I hate non-disclosures. Oh, anyway, I can't tell you where the name Team RSS came from, but it's a killer idea, and I think I can pretty safely say here's the idea. This is the idea. Basically, these days, there are lots of organizations and companies and people who are vitally interested in really simple syndication, or RSS. And in our interests are kind of the same in whatever company we work for, or whether we work for a company or don't. That's not to say that we don't have the interests of our employer and our own personal interests at heart, but there are some things that we have in common because, like, for example, today... I've got the announcement of a great site called publicradiofeeds.com, which is done by Todd Maffin. And Todd is a Canadian and a guy who works in public radio in Canada. And publicradiofeeds.com, he calls the most comprehensive list of public radio podcasts on the internet. And it's great stuff. It's really unbelievably complete. Much more than I thought was there. And it's just exciting to have somebody following that for us. And, of course, up in the right-hand corner is a OPML. It's the white-on-orange XML sign, and it points to an OPML file. And the OPML file, let's just go do a fetch on this because it's not coming through in the browser. So I have a script here in Frontier that does an HTTP request for me. And sure enough, there is an OPML that has all of the information in it, so it could be turned into a directory. And I'm going to do exactly that. I'm going to link to this from Podcatch, www.podcatch.com, and I'm going to... include it there. So, and then probably some other directory stuff coming there too. Contrast this to Google, who announced that they have a beta of AdSense for feeds, which, well, you know, I wanted to, I wanted to say is like, oh, come on, give me a fucking break. Okay, great. You got AdSense for feeds, but I've been hearing about this for months. And actually, it was pretty well leaked 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago when it started showing up in some, you know, of the, I think it was Engadget that's using it. And I think they've got some kind of a deal, a distribution deal with Feedburner. And, you know, okay, so you're going to put ads in RSS feeds. And, you know, you want to know what I think about that? And I've said this so many times before. But I'll say it again, is that RSS itself is an advertising medium. And the idea of putting ads in ads is pretty repulsive to me. You know, I'd like to see people be more creative about it. Give you an example. Engadget, which is like my favorite example for this. I like the Engadget feed. And Jason Calcanis says, Dave, you like it so much. You either have to accept ads in it, or you have to pay me money to read the feed. And you know, but before I pay you money, which is like the last thing that I want to do, because, you know, it's my money is like, I think it's pretty expensive money for you, Jason, because I'll tell you why. Because I'm a blogger, and when I read your feed, there's a pretty good chance that I'm going to point to something from that feed. In other words, I'm just going to do a right click on the link to the story and copy shortcut, and then go over into my outliner that I edit scripting news in and paste in, you know, type a little, you know, thing in gadget colon, and then the title of the piece, and then select the title, and then choose link to from my menu, and boom, it becomes a link, and I save it, and I put it out on scripting news, and then however many people read the link and they see the name, oh, Engadget, and then the thing. And then about 2,000 or 3,000 of those people, well, on a good day, on a not so good day, 1,000 people, then click on the link, right, and read the article or skim it and are impressed by the ad, okay? And you get to charge your advertiser for 1,000 views of the ad and however many click-throughs. That's not my problem. But I brought you 1,000, 2,000 readers. And I think that for that, I ought not have to pay to read your feed. I think I'm paying for it. So consider that your feed to me as a blogger, and I am a blogger, and I do insist that you think about that, okay? That I've paid for it whenever I link to it. Now, of course, I can't promise that I'm going to link, because there goes my editorial integrity, because I have a rule about when I link to something. I link to it when I think an informed person would want to be aware of that piece of information or point of view, or both. I mean, it could be both an information and a point of view. So I kind of, and I have found that now from a cognitive standpoint, and yes, I do have a mind, you know, that's the bad news for you advertisers, is that I'm not just an eyeball. I also have, or actually I have two eyeballs. I'm not just a pair of eyeballs, but I also have a mind. And my mind goes through cognitive dissonance. In other words, I lose my suspension of disbelief when I get two different messages from one unit of text. In other words, I'm reading along, actually almost always skimming, because the content of Engadget, I'm interested in gadgetry, but I'm not a gadget freak. I'm not like Casso, for example. Casso has a picture of all the gadgetry he carries with him, and that's how he stays so skinny. He's a really skinny guy. He's always working out because he's carrying about 50 pounds of gadgets with him. But I'm not like that. This is 2005, and I can't go anywhere without my cell phone, without my camera, without my Arcos. What else do I carry with me? I have a little Wi-Fi detector thing. Who knows what else? That's probably about it. Oh, I carry a laptop almost always, unless I'm just going out to the supermarket. I almost always bring my Sony Vaio with me. So I'm interested in this stuff, but I'm not going to buy it all that frequently. But when I do, you know, well, my cell phone is, it was supposed to be $60 a month, but it's turning into about $200 a month. They found all these ways to ding me. The camera was $200 in total, which probably was about the best deal of it all. The computer was $3,000. So you get an idea that basically when I buy something here, it could be a lot of money, you know. I'm going to buy a car, and I'm getting ready to buy a new car. It's been 6 years. The old car is, it still runs great, but, you know, I could buy cars, by the way, these days are gadgets. So, you know, I get a chance to buy some more gadgetry, and this piece of gadgetry is going to cost not $3,000, but at least $23,000. That's how much cars cost these days. Anyway, why do you care about this? Well, I'll tell you why you care. Because you have an opportunity to sell me one of whatever it is that you're writing about, okay? Now, you're walking on some like sort of weird ethical grounds, and I want you to do the right thing, Jason. I don't want you to start running editorial because you can make money on the ads for it. But that's where your separation of church and state comes in. And publications have had to deal with this kind of issue all the time. In other words, you let your editorial people choose the things to cover. And then you, the publisher, through something algorithmic, I would hope, so that you don't actually have to sit there hunting for ads all the time. You know, on the occasion when you have an ad for the product that's being written about. In other words, give me a way to get more information about the product or to close the deal. In other words, on the one time in 1,000 or maybe 10,000 that I read something on Engadget and I want to go from that to purchase, facilitate it and get your piece, get your cut from that. You're entitled to a cut. You sold it, okay? And I insist that you give me the truth. I want you to tell me, I buy, every product I buy has flaws. I know it, okay? And like I'm shopping for car now and I'm using cars.yahoo.com to do it. Last time I bought a car, I did it with msncars.com. And this time I'm doing it with Yahoo. And it's wonderful. I mean, and what is the first thing? Take a guess. What's the first thing I jump to when I'm, you know, considering a model or a make or a manufacturer? I go read the reviews. And the reviews are starting to get, people are getting really good at writing these reviews. And it sort of goes back to the piece of podcast that I did, which I really hope everybody, if you're listening to this podcast and you haven't listened to the piece of podcast yet, I would say throw this one in the trash and go to morningcoffeenotes.com and look for the Leaning Tower of Pisa and go listen to that one because it'll put it all together. This podcast in comparison, you know, this is just like chatter compared to that one. That one sort of is like the anthem. This is a movement or not even a movement. This is an application of that anthem. It's a song and the anthem is the manifesto. So anyway, where was I? Right. So the reviewers on Yahoo are doing a great job. And they're helping me make the decision. So one of the cars I'm thinking about is the Honda Element. And, you know, the reviewers there are in love with that car. I mean, it's not, you know, it's kind of hard to find a negative review, but you have to, I mean, all the cars that I've been looking at are very, very well reviewed cars, but there's more to it than just whether or not they liked it, because they tell you what the experience of owning the car is going to be like. And I have validated this because I go back and read the reviews of the Lexus RX 300, which is what I'm driving right now. And, you know, that's one that I've been driving for 6 years. Is it 6 years? Yeah, it's 6 years. Almost exactly. And yeah, I mean, I know what the pros and cons of the car are. A very few cons. It's a really well-made car, and it drives beautifully, and it's powerful. I've only really come to appreciate how powerful a car it is in the last few years. Last couple of years, particularly like this year when I was driving around in the southern U.S. and you know when you have to pass a car on a two-lane highway in Alabama. This car's got the power, and you can just go, you know, put the foot on the pedal and go to the floor and, like, lean back, and the thing takes off like a rocket. I mean, it's amazing. Pretty sure the car that I get to replace it will not be one of those, unfortunately. It'll get better gas mileage, though, and so there's your trade-off. Anyway, so there's information available, and I'm sure Yahoo would do a deal with you, okay, for any product that they have in their database. I'm sure that they would be willing to pay you to link to their section on that, because I got to believe they're going to make some big bucks off this deal when I buy the car, because I'm getting the dealer, I'm including them in it because I think it's only fair. You know, when I go to get a price quote, I'm clicking on the link in the Yahoo site, and I'm pretty sure that they've now got me linked in to that sale, and that whether I buy a Chevy Astro, which I'm really interested in, looks really nice, and it's a better size for me than the Element is. Or if I buy an Element, or I buy a Toyota Sienna, or a Honda Odyssey. Or a Dodge Caravan, or whatever. I think they're going to get considerably large. I hope they get a large cut. They deserve it. I'm doing my shopping. I'm going to the dealerships to do test drives, but I'm doing my shopping using Yahoo. And Jason, I think that a cut of that is available to you too. And I would like that much better. As a user, that just feels that feels like you're helping me, and that rather than like here I've just read an article about some really cool device like PlayStation 3 or whatever, vaguely aware that there's a conference going on, a gaming conference going on, and all the gadget guys are there. Right, and so like on that one, there's an ad for bandwidth or something like that. Come on, we can do a lot better. This is 2005, and the relevancy of these ads, you know, it's pretty sucky. I like it if they're exactly about the thing that I just read about. Then I don't have two topics proposed; I have one, and my poor little brain likes that better. And an important thing that all you advertisers, I want you all to remember, okay, is that I'm not just a bunch of pair of eyeballs. I'm also a brain, and I want you to respect that brain, and I want you to feed it, okay? All right, so I want to like tell you a little story, and this is something I wrote about today on Scripting News, and I want to try doing this verbally, not just in writing. I mean, I spent a lot longer writing this than I'm probably going to spend telling the story. But I wanted to try, telling the story verbally. It's going to take me less time to do it, but it's going to take you more time to hear it, which I think is kind of interesting. Anyway, I got a call yesterday from, Benny, who is a reporter at the, San Francisco Chronicle. And he was writing a story about KYOU, and they had their debut yesterday, and I was their debut podcaster. This is a station that is broadcasting podcasts, and I had a great talk with Benny, and it reminded me of the kind of talks that we were having in 1994, especially in the Bay Area, but I imagine in other places too, where like people were discovering the web. And the web was this wonderful, exciting, bright, wide-open space. Just really cool. And this had all this potential. And when you're lucky enough to be around when something like that's happening, you know, it's there's an energy to it that's really hard to describe in words. But it's a shared energy. It's something that you get off on by sharing it with other people who are also getting that, hey, it's a pretty exciting time to be alive. That's how podcasting feels like right now. Anyway, in 1994, I was working on the San Francisco strike paper, and you'll see, if you go back into the archive of DaveNet, which is davenet.scripting.com, you'll see there's at least one article there where I tell the story of how this happened and what the experience was like. And it was one of those great experiences. And what was cool about it was that the reporters, I'm a quick study, you know, and I learned the protocols and formats of the web in the end of the summer of 1994 and the early fall. I studied HTTP, HTML, FTP, TCP/IP. You know, I'm a programmer, and I'm excited about, you know, what was exciting about these things was that they were so breezy. There was so much air in it. They were so easy to understand. They were so lightweight. That was the cool thing about it. And lightweight, we know, is how you build really big standards. And that was the experience. I was a Unix programmer in the mid to late 70s when Unix was at the stage that podcasting is at now. I mean, you know, can you imagine? And Unix, this is before there was an Apple II, before there was an IBM PC or a Macintosh, or it was when the internet was booting up too. There wasn't much of an internet at that point. It was all happening right then. And that was the really cool thing about Unix. And by the way, was the cool thing about the IBM PC and the Apple II. And, you know, it's funny, you know, I'm intersected, my path and Eric Raymond's path intersected sometime after XML RPC came out, and when it was being adopted by the Python community, and I say adopted, I mean, it was really adopted by Python. basically baked into the to the distribution, so that everybody that got Python after a certain point got an XML RPC stack in there as well. And Eric wrote about it in his book. And what he noted was is that it was a very Unix-y sort of thing. And it's true. It is very much a Unix-y sort of thing. And I think that a lot of the Unix guys would be surprised to know that that the desktop computers that are, you know, so popular at their deep core, deepest core, underneath all the Microsoft software, which I don't know how it's architected, to be fair. I have never actually seen the source code of a Microsoft product, which I guess is kind of telling, huh, isn't it? I've been using their software for a long time and using a lot of it, but I've never actually seen the source code to a Microsoft app, so I don't really know. I kind of suspect that it's not airy on the inside, that it's kind of a little bit like ratty, which, believe me, I've got a fair amount of that stuff myself. Although I find that that at some point it's a good idea to rewrite the code if it gets too sort of complex or difficult to understand. Anyway, I digress. Oh, let me just finish that one off, because Eric noticed that it was so Unix-like, and I thought, boy, I wish I could just explain to you how, you know, where Unix sort of forked, and I went with a fork that wasn't called Unix, and it was called the Apple II, because I was one of the, and there weren't many of us, but I was one of the Unix guys who thought user experience was where it was at, and that I wanted to figure out how to make this stuff work for people, because I'd had the thrill of seeing people actually using Unix systems, and I was one of the hippies who, you know, we were kind of rare, but then we weren't so rare that you know, that we saw computers as a liberating thing, not a corporate thing, and it took some guts at that point, I think, to go that route with your life, because like everybody in my graduating class at the University of Wisconsin. I can't say everybody, but everybody that I knew went in the direction of getting a job working for a mini computer company or a mainframe company. But instead, I went to Silicon Valley and became an Apple II programmer. And that's a short version of the story, of course. Anyway, Benny told me about the programming on KYU during drive time yesterday. One of the things he told me is that I was on in place of IMUS, and I thought that was kind of ironic. They took IMUS off the air and put me on, and I thought, you know, it's funny because IMUS was one of my heroes when I was a college student. I used to go back to New York. I don't think he was national at the time. He was on WNBC, I think, in New York, and I would record IMUS in the morning and bring it back to me to college to listen, because I just thought the guy was so cool. It's kind of like Coors Beer was then. It was a kind of a rare thing, and, you know, you'd kind of like cherish it. I don't know. It seems weird to think about that I would, you know, do that, but IMUS was kind of a hero of mine. And, well, there you have it. I said to Benny, all things must pass, you know. So anyway, he told me a story about this guy who was recording a podcast every day on his morning commute in the Bay Area, and I thought, this is, wow, what a turnabout, because you know, you think about people being caught in traffic in the morning, and you know, there they are, sort of listening to Flipping the Dial on the radio. Have you ever been here? Because like I've been there. And you flip the dial on the radio, and you're sort of touring through this desert wasteland of moronity. Gets more stupid every new station you go to gets stupider. They're always like zoos, and they have all these guys that are like, you know, I don't know, girl, they always have a woman too, it's not just guys. Anyway, so here's this guy who says, flips it around and says, instead of listening to the trash, I'm gonna create my own. And he's talking about the wake that he went to, and his own mortality, and I said to Benny, I said, you know, Benny, this is what we're all thinking about all the time. This is basically the human condition, And he has the guts to actually name the tune. And I thought, well, what a wonderful thing. And I told Benny the story of time when I was caught in traffic in Boston listening to a WBUR FM pledge drive. WBUR is one of two public radio stations in Boston. The other is WGBH. And you might think WGBH is the big public radio station, but it's not. BUR is. And I think BUR stands for Boston University Radio. And so they had a pledge drive. And all I was thinking about was, could we come up with some technology that would know that I had already paid and, cut out the pledge drive and just give me the programming? Because why the hell should I be listening to this pledge drive that I, had already paid? And then Jane Christo comes on. Jane was the station manager at the time. I don't think she is anymore. And she said something that would be repeated many, many times in the days ahead. She said, "This is your station. You're the owners. We depend on you to pay the bill, I'm reading. I'm reading. You can tell I make this stuff up as I'm going along because this is me reading from the text." She says, "This is your station. You're the owners. Okay. We depend on you to pay our bills. That way, we are responsible only to you, blah, blah, blah," and on, which was total bullshit. Because, they take money from all kinds of different places. You can hear the commercials at the end of all the shows. They have sponsorship and they have advertisers. I mean, they like to say that's non-commercial radio, but hey, they got ads. That's commercial. So anyway, so I was thinking, she said that you own the place. So I called, when I got into the work, I called them up and asked to speak with Miss Christo. And they asked who's calling. I said, "My name is Dave Weiner, and by the way, I'm owner of the station." And nobody got the joke. I don't think they listen to their own pledge drives, I guess, or they don't see the irony in it. So I didn't get to speak to Jane, but I did get to speak with the vice president, and I asked the question, what can I do with my ownership? And basically, it turns out what I can do is I can pay. That's one of my things, and I can listen. So there are two things that I get to do as owner. I get to listen, and I get to pay. And but I don't get to talk. I don't get to share my thinking. So basically, the public radio model is that you pay and you listen, but what do you think? They don't care. They don't care. So that was just a couple of years ago. And I realized that that's the flaw in public radio. It isn't public. What they do is they put talking heads up there to talk, put experts, and the experts may know something about the field. I'm not saying they don't know, but they rarely tell us everything because they have to be politically correct because they have sponsors too. And they have to not say things that those sponsors don't like. Think about it. I mean, one of the reasons I get into so much trouble is that I don't have sponsors. And I can say what I think. And I know that I'm going to piss some people off when I say this or that because, they don't have very thick skins or they don't want to be talked about that way. And some of the people I do that with are powerful people. And so they punish me for it. And so that when you hear something like, well, Dave Weiner has got a personality flaw or he's a jerk or he's difficult. These are people who heard something that I said that they didn't like. And they don't like get that that's part of like my job. That's part of what I do. I mean, I'm trying to set some kind of an example. I'm trying to be a Pied Piper for other people so that they feel that it's not without precedent, that they wouldn't be the only one who actually said what they think. So I felt a certain sense of victory when I heard about this guy who was broadcasting, who was podcasting his drive commute, and then that got broadcast, and I thought, well, we've closed the loop in such a short period of time, and I thought about a really unique way of saying that at the installation was done. We had the software was installed and it was running. And in Apache, they say when you install, Apache, what they say then is they come up with a page that says it worked. And that's the way I felt when Benny was telling me this story. I was saying, "Benny, man, it worked. We got there. I said, I can die a happy man now. And that's, and I do mean it. It's like, it's a great thing. I know I don't have to do anything more because now I've done everything I need to do because things like that are happening and I didn't have to do anything to make them happen. And so I feel good about that. Anyway, that's the end of that story. I think it reads better. You know what? When you put the time in to write something, so if you go to archive.scripting.com /2005/05/17, if you scroll to the end, you'll see a section called It Worked. There's a picture of a guy with an accordion there, and sit down, take 5 minutes and read it. I think it reads better than it does when you try to narrate it, especially when you've already written something. Anyway, if you made it this far, I owe you an explanation, and unfortunately I can't give you the explanation, and I really feel bad about that, for why the two conversation starters are delayed. It isn't, you know, I guess what you can infer here is that there are other people involved with this and they didn't want this thing discussed publicly, at least not yet. So, that's all I can say. So, unfortunately, I wish I could say more. I wish it didn't have to be quite so mysterious, but I do owe you an explanation. And I won't forget that, and there will come a time, hopefully not in the too distant future, when I will be able to give you that explanation. And if I were to tell you when, well, that's even something I can't say. So, yeah, life sucks, doesn't it? Anyway, so I guess that's it. Let's see how much time I've used. I have 31 minutes. See, my podcasts aren't 40 minutes anymore. They're 30 minutes. There you have it. It's a 31-minute podcast. It's May 17th, 2005. This is Morning Coffee Notes. My name is Dave Weiner, and I'll see you again real soon, everybody.